Okay, that's one of my go-to TV shows when I was a kid. Probably most of my family watched it maybe sometimes, but I think my brothers and sisters watched it too. It was, Mutual of Omaha's Wild Fucking Kingdom. I mean, crazy, crazy shit. Tigers and elephants and hippopotami or hippopotamus. I don't care what the plural is. I'll tell you there was a shitload. Lots of fucking hippopotamus. And that Marlon Perkins, man, he was a different kind of guy. Head of the St. Louis Zoo. That kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? Head of the St. Louis Zoo. I wonder if the chief of police of St. Louis or whatever, recognizable cop type crocodile authority ever wonders if he or she is head of the St. Louis Zoo. It is Tuesday. Yeah, it's Tuesday just after 5 p.m. on November the 12th, 2017. I made a comment. I left a comment on Zero Hedge tonight. I'm kind of ashamed of it. Not that I'm really ashamed. I mean, actually, when it comes to Zero Hedge, and please excuse the noise, I'm repositioning my blimp disc sack. Most of my insides have to be recombromulated twice or three times a day because of the floatage. Got lots of floatage. That's what Dr. Grunkus calls it. We'll catch up with some of my medical care later. Yeah, I was on Zero Hedge tonight and I was reading that article about the mobs of kids. Excuse me, I'm drinking a little coffee here. I'm not drinking beer when I podcast. That's the kind of quality you get from me. If I ever get to the point that I am drunk while podcasting, you will know it's very near the end either of my existential life cycle. Or the end of normality. I know I don't want to be sober on day zero, is my fucking point. I don't want to be walking around. I don't want to be lollygagging. I would just as soon barricade myself and observe, observe, as Marlon Perkins would. Marlon Perkins would observe nature. He would observe the creatures in their natural fucking habitats. He would observe these fucking human creatures and he'd marvel and ask all sorts of fucking weird ass questions. Like, for example, is the human a beaver? Is it a tiger? Or is it a chimpanzee? Because we could be. In reality, a beaver, tiger, chimp. I think that might be the mixture of our breeding. I think we exhibit the characteristics of very traditional predators. I also think that we can be lazy as fuck. If you've ever observed cats, that's actually a natural behavior. That's a way of conserving energy. You call it laziness, The cat calls it being cool. Who's right and who's wrong here, you fool? The cat just hangs out, watches the valley below, and waits for some gazelle or creature, maybe an old one. You know, the cats are trying to be cool about it. Go for the old ones and take them out. Yeah, the story about the kids flash mobbing to shoplift is an interesting story. I don't know that I would classify it as a new story. I mean, I think that I heard stories like this going back almost a decade now, but I think they're becoming more difficult to cover up. I think the reason why they're telling us about this shit, finally, is because I think a lot more of this shit is actually happening. That's my own personal theory. Now, of course, here in Little Saigon, there isn't really much shit to rip off. And if you're ripping off anyone, it would probably be the Asian shop owners down by 12th and Jackson. I wouldn't suggest it. Those crazy old ex-Viet Cong, they will take you out General Chang style. I promise you, you will have flashbacks to Da Nang. But you should always look for a silver lining. And I had this idea, and it's probably racist, but it really isn't, because I don't give a shit about race in this context. In this particular case, it may be that these particular shoplifting mobs are of a particular hue on the color chart. And I think that's irrelevant. I don't think this is about race or ethnicity or skin color. I do think it's about poverty. And frankly, hopelessness, which isn't always about being poor. Lots of poor societies throughout history avoided the cycle of hopelessness. The reason, and how they did this, and this is really critical, folks, they avoided the cycle of hopelessness because they never got their expectations above a certain level. Now, I know there are some people out there say, Dan, you can't be promoting lower expectations. That's wrong. And I disagree. I don't want you to lower your expectations. I don't give a fuck about your expectations, okay? I really don't care. The bottom line is this. I expect a lot more of this shit before it gets better. And frankly, if it's just teenagers robbing stores, we should count ourselves lucky as fuck. If this is as bad as it gets, if it gets no worse than a bunch of fucking kids who have no hope breaking into stores and stealing shit, because again, they're told by their little magical glowing rectangle that they will never be adequate. I mean, keep in mind, one of the core messages of America, you will never, ever be adequate, ever. Not unless you have the new phone, the new car, the new clothes, and then about 6 months later you'll be told, you're not adequate any longer. That's a cycle of spending money until you have no money. But imagine I was a crooked fuck, and I was mayor of Chicago. Imagine I was a crooked fuck and I was mayor of Chicago. I have an idea to make a little extra money, Marlon Perkins. Marlon, would you be interested in becoming the zoo director? Of Chicago. We'll call it the Chicago Zoo. We'll advertise it as an online zoo. It'll involve tagging all of the young people between the ages of 15, no, excuse me, 9 and 33, and having drones follow them about because, hey, we're tagging them with a GPS tracking device. And then on Sunday nights, as per when I was a youth, I will be able to tune in to maybe CBS or ABC or one of the propaganda networks. And I can watch Wild Kingdom with Marlon Perkins. Oh yeah, he's probably dead. But why can't we have robot Marlon Perkins, and why can't he tag all of the youth of Chicago so we can observe the beast that is the human being in the fucking wild as the beast was meant to be watched? We could watch the beast ravaging the youth, hunting for hot, busty flesh. What are you gonna tell the beast? All I have are Bitcoin? I promise you the beast will say, well then I'll take your bitch. And if you tell them it's your mom, they won't care. And you'll get to watch that every Sunday night from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Forget all that fucking bullshit, fictional purge crap. Not a real thing. Not a real holiday. A really stupid show. What I'm providing for you is cinema veritas, the reality of nature, watching human beings doing stupid human shit in the wild. If you don't think that television show makes a lot of money, it makes tons of money. And unlike Cops, we observe. We don't interrupt. We don't stop. Yeah, you'd probably say, isn't that crooked as fuck, Dan, to watch people being ravaged by the violence of their fucking city? I don't know. If you ask me, a city is like a wood chipper. In fact, maybe a city is exactly like a wood chipper. And it is inherently brutal. It takes in cattle and grain and people throughout history. It dices, it slices, it pulverizes and produces an abstract mush called civilization, where you can get your gumbus cube and your slop and your fucking muddy water, and you can listen to your propaganda in the public square. And the king can proclaim, oh my, my people, everything is fine. Ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance. I had a checkup, an unscheduled checkup last night with Dr. Grunkus. I've been experiencing various kinds of breakouts. I would describe these as explosive and painful. And I'm a little worried. Yeah, a little worried about these weird breakouts. And then I got these strange boils. These boils that are forming all across my chestal zone. And so, yeah, I had a surprise visit from Dr. Grunkus last night, and we discussed my current diet. He recommended that I start consuming Nally's tamales. Every everyone knows that Nally's tamales contain all of the necessary vitamins and minerals and heavy metals that everybody needs to survive if they want to live in this wretched world. If you consume one can of Nally's tamales every day, it will transport you to the next level. You will be released from this physical bondage of mungus and flabby meat. And at the moment of final resupplicance, as you embrace the fiery oblivion... Yeah, so Dr. Grunk has paid me a visit. And last night in my apartment, Dr. Grunk has performed one of his many procedures that he does, usually in an alleyway. So, good luck, right? Because there's better lighting in my apartment where I'm living. The lighting is okay. I'd call it adequate for surgery in the 18th century. And I kind of like the 18th century, just like H.P. Lovecraft kind of liked it too, that fucking nasty, racist, anti-Semitic old fuck. Dr. Grunkus said I needed to de-exclamate my Grontian zone. This involves a metallic procedure, various types of probes and ointments. You have to use a kind of harsh and abrasive acid. And then, at the moment of action, you have to spin up a kind of, well, flywheel that powers a kind of old-style drill that Dr. Grunk has found on Craigslist, an old dental drill. And he hooked up some metal bushing to the end of it. And he sticks that in between your flimbics. You have to unclench when he does this. Sometimes he'll put some lubricating ointment on the bushing. But not last night, no. He knew that it had to be as abrasive and horrible, discombobulating, in order to shake the demons out of my butthole. Of course, when Dr. Grunkus was done, I lay there bleeding. Bleeding on the floor of my bathroom, my bungus pipe gushing, my general feeling of self-loathing and humiliation. That's the key to every visit to Dr. Grunkus, if I may be so fucking bold. If you don't feel a sense of humiliation afterwards, if you don't feel a sense of self-loathing and just a general feeling that you want to toss yourself in the garbage heap of history, next topic. And in a way, as I sip a little coffee and allow myself to re-ungudulate some of the bad feelings from last night's medical visit. Oh, it's still causing shimmers. But in a way, this next topic is quasi, sort of, a little optimistic. It's a little optimistic. I wouldn't call it very optimistic because these days I treat optimism like I treat lawyers, like I treat gypsy curses or communists as something to avoid. Did I say girlfriends? Yes. All of the above, gypsy curses, communists, lawyers, and girlfriends, all things at this stage of my existence, I will do my best to avoid, and hopefully, God willing, I will not have a girlfriend. I will never need a fucking lawyer. I will avoid gypsy curses, and communism is a load of bullshit. But this next topic is quasi-optimistic. And so, yeah, you can call bullshit on me, but I'm gonna roll some positivity in a weird, fucked up, twisted way your direction. And this is a topic that's come up before. So if you wanna know, when I was an undergraduate at the University of Washington, way, way back in the late 80s, early 90s, I studied history. And I won't claim I was a good student or a bad student. I think that's kind of fucking irrelevant. I did learn a couple things, and I had a couple opinions, a couple of my own personal opinions. If you can believe it, when I was 20 years old, sitting in contemporary European history class, listening to our great professor from the Jackson School of International Studies talk about her time in the diplomatic corps, yeah. She was a professor and an ex-fucking diplomat, if you can fucking believe it. Actually, the Jackson School is as deep, it is really a deep state fucking hellhole. I'm pretty certain it's a globalist deep state fucking hellhole. Okay, I'm just gonna be blunt. I took a couple classes out of that place when I was in school. One of them was kind of okay, but the truth is, I had a really creepy feeling about the Jackson School back then. I probably has gotten worse. Anyways, I don't want to talk more about the Jackson School of International Globalism and Communism. It's not really relevant for this current conversation. This particular professor, who loved talking about the achievements of liberal democracy, she also loved quoting that jackass Fukuyama. Back then, it was like a new thing. Oh, end of history, endism. Look up that fuck. I think he teaches at Johns Hopkins or something. It's the end of history. The liberal democracies have succeeded. The Berlin Wall fell down, motherfucker. And Germany is reunified. All hail the new epic of globalism. Blah, 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 blah. That was the general fucking attitude in the spring of 1990. A few months before, Saddam Hussein was tricked into invading Kuwait. And I say tricked because I think he was hoodwinked. It's not the first time our government's done bullshit like this. If you look into the history of the Korean War, specifically the Truman diplomatic corps and the messages they sent through back channels to what was then, essentially the North Korean government or the Communist Korean government. Yeah, they more or less told the Chinese Communists and the Communist North Koreans or Koreans that they really didn't give a fuck what happened there. They were interested in Taiwan, Formosa. They didn't give a shit about Korea. That was basically the message. Kind of like the message that the Bush administration, the elder Bush, the one that is now dead, thank fucking Lord in heaven. Kind of like the message he sent, or his administration sort of hinted through a diplomatic rep to Saddam in 1990. Oh, those fucking Kuwaitis are side slacking you. They're side fucking you. They're horizontally drilling. What a bunch of fuckers. They're drinking your milkshake. Why don't you invade those fuckers? So, I told you I would give you a little bit of optimism, and I need to stay on task. This professor in the spring of 1990 in contemporary European history class out of the Jackson School of International Studies, this particular fucking professor was really proud of the fact that Tito's Yugoslavia, that's Marshal Tito, the man who stood up to the Nazis, the man who stood up to even Joseph Stalin himself. You may not know this, but Yugoslavia never joined the Comecon. They never joined the Warsaw Pact. Yugoslavia, even though they were technically, whatever, communist, they never really joined the communist Eastern Bloc country. So it was always kind of an iffy country in terms of being on the periphery, so to speak. And they became partial members of the EU, I think back in the 80s. And hey, they hosted the fucking Olympics in 84. Sarajevo, fuck. They must be civilized. Which means all that ethnic hatred, Tito destroyed it. He used his communism and his communist experts like Kardelj to completely erase ethnic hatred. That was the message of contemporary European history class in the spring of 1990. Within 18 months, Yugoslavia would start falling apart. Now, nobody knew this at the time. I didn't know it. I simply suspected that the Fukuyama stuff, the end of history crap, and anything about how great the dictator Tito was probably fucking bullshit. It's not to say that people can't get over their hatred. They sure as shit can. But the history of dictators beating their people psychologically with propaganda and all sorts of bullshit to convince them to not hate their neighbors, that history has never been successful. Never. It really, really hasn't. In fact, the only thing you can do in that situation is kill a lot of people, or what I refer to as bonsai tree economics and politics. Okay? You know, if you want your bonsai tree, aka your perfect Marxist society, you're gonna leave some clippings on the floor. Now, we don't call them clippings. And we don't talk about where they took old grandma last night. We don't. We just don't talk about it. Anyways, this particular professor really believed that somehow Yugoslavia was an example of multiculturalism in success. And like I said, from the date of that fucking lecture, roughly 18 months later, Bosnians and Serbians and Croats and all the fucking gangs started killing each other. Now, how is this an optimistic fucking topic? I will tell you why. There is currently a campaign to dehumanize humans, to take the human out of the person. Part of this has to do with family. They've totally convinced you, all of you, that families are bullshit. Or, what's more interesting, that they're synthetic. Which means they've abstracted the family just like they've abstracted food. Can you believe it? They've told you that the family is a homogenous gumbus. You can throw any group of things together and call it a family. That's what they've told you. But anything like traditional family, man, woman, child, or children, that is not to be discussed. In fact, in some ways, that is to be erased. That is to be forgotten. That is to be obliterated in the great cauldron of history if we are to have a globalist system of massive, spectacular fabulousness. We must erase the family. Yeah. They want to erase the family. They want to erase your sexuality. They want to convince you, if you're a man, that you're a woman, and if you're a woman, that you're really a man. They want to tell you that focusing on your reproductive organs is the most important focus politically, socially, in this day and age. They really do. And then when it comes to serious issues, like, I don't know, the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we fucking eat, and all these stupid goddamn wars, and the fact that we're losing our freedom day to day, when it comes to actual shit that matters, silence. amongst the human beings, silence amongst the grumbly folk. Now, if you are to believe the globalist technocrats, within a generation or two, they will have converted us into dehumanized, desexualized, you know, basically meat sacks with chips in our brains. And they might end up being right. I truly don't know. But what I can tell you is this. That fucking professor, she truly believed that Marshal Tito, Dictator Tito, had taken all the ethnic hatred of the Yugoslav people, oh, by the way, a country that no longer exists. She truly believed that Marshal Tito had wrung out the ethnic hatred of the peoples of Yugoslavia. That was total fucking bullshit. The reason why this is an optimistic story is because it's a poison pill story. I think that globalism probably can only succeed in one way, and it's the way I've always known. There are people that try to sell me on the life expectancy of the infinite gray nothing. What we're currently going through right now, the current paradigm, I call it the infinite gray nothing. The bland, bludgeoning, eternal tyranny of mediocrity, rackets, cronyism, and basically living like we're pirates and we own the fucking world. Oh, that oil over there? Oh, that oil is mine. Oh, you see that part of the moon over there? Yeah, that part of the moon is mine too. Oh, you see that section of the Arctic Sea? Well, gee, did I tell you that's mine? There are people who believe that within one or two generations, anything that makes us individuals, anything that makes us capable of acting like sovereign human beings will be erased, will be wiped out. Public education will have wiped it out. They might be right. They might be right. I don't believe they are, for any number of reasons, not the least of which is that when I walk outside my door each day and I take that proverbial whiff of the fresh air, I can kind of tell that our current paradigm, our current society, our current civilization or empire, and frankly, this applies to all of the quote-unquote developed countries, if you take a good fucking whiff of that fucking air, you can tell that it's way past its shelf life. If you could pick up every country in the European Union, if you could pick up the United States, if you could even pick up China or Japan and turn these countries over, you would see that there was an expiration date. And it was probably years ago, which means, yeah, we're eating rancid meat now. That is the point of civilization we're at. So if you're asking me, Dan, can they produce their god-awful THX 1138 Robert Duvall skin job fucking future of dehumanized, desexualized, transgendered, transmogrified Jesus in a fucking phone booth future? Maybe, but not with 8 billion people. Probably, maybe with 1 million people. So the only thing I can see happening for the globalists, if this is really their plan is one global reality. The only option they really have is bonsai politics, and boy, you Marxists love bonsai politics, and bonsai economics. Now, bonsai politics and economics is a nice way of saying that in the process of making an omelet, when you're making that wooden chair, when you're building that home or that yurt, there's going to be some scrap left to the side. There's going to be stuff that doesn't fit. When you are grooming that bonsai tree you call the perfect state, there will be clippings on the floor. if that tree was meant to grow 100 feet tall, and you want it to only be 12 inches tall so you can control it, so you can monitor it, so that you can be God, at least God on earth, you're going to leave a lot of fucking clippings on the floor. And you're going to say to yourself, Dan, what do you mean by a clipping? The clippings is like the Great Leap Forward. Between 1956 and I think 1962, roughly 60 million Chinese died building a bunch of shitty dams and highways for Mao Zedong. That's 60 million. Roughly 8 million Ukrainians died when Stalin did his little forced collectivization program in the early 1930s in the Ukraine. Another 10 to 15 million, depending upon who you list to, died in Stalin's Great Terror. And, you know, the Great Terror being the time that he decided to murder just about everybody. And if you blame his incompetence for ultimately leading to most of the casualties the Soviets suffered in World War II, the butcher's bill for our good bonsai tree man, Joseph Stalin, somewhere between 20 and 30 million. So yeah, Mao Zedong has him beat. But hey, with killing Chinese people, you're always hungry 30 minutes later. And then there's our good friend Hitler, and who knows how many he killed. We're constantly told that he killed at least 6 million Jews, which I think is probably true. But folks, he killed a lot of other people too. Those millions of Russians dead? Yeah. That was Germans. At least half of them, maybe the other half were Soviet incompetents, but at least half were good old-fashioned Germans. The only way you're going to make your perfect fucking society of everybody getting along is to basically keep people in the fucking zoo. That's it. You can put people in a zoo, you can keep the population low, you can watch them 24/7, getting your rocks off as king of the fucking world. But you're probably not going to be able to do this with 8 billion people. I'm not even sure you could do it with a billion people. Even where technology is at right now, I don't think you could do it at a billion. But maybe you could do it at that magical number that is randomly stated on those not at all creepy Georgia guidestones. What is the number that fucking shitty, creepy shit says? I think it's like 500 million. Keep the human race below 500 million. I think you might be able to do 500 million. I think you could have 500 cities of a million people, and you could monitor them and put chips in them and shove pipes up their buttholes. But even in that scenario, I think that the human race eventually dies. We do. We are not creatures designed to thrive in isolation and control. We're not designed to thrive when we are in a prison, in captivity. In fact, I will contend that one of the interesting features of intelligent creatures, like our good friend the orca whale, or even the fucking parrot, none of us enjoys being treated like a slave. None of us enjoys living in a fucking prison. None of us. But humans especially. So yeah, you could keep the human race below 500 million and you could manage them through your bonsai tree philosophy of economics and history and politics and keep them nice and clipped at a small number, but eventually that number will dwindle. Human beings, and probably this is true of life itself, if you really clue in on what it means to be in the dance of life. What does it mean to be participating in life versus poking at it? Human beings need clean air. We do. I'm sorry. If you're one of these fucks who thinks we can breathe in shit all day, you're full of shit. We need clean air. And if you're one of these assholes who thinks it's funny that Flint, Michigan's kids were drinking leaded water for a while, fuck you. Human beings need clean water. And guess what? In addition to clean air and clean water, we need food that is healthy, which means we need soil that is healthy. And we need shelter. We need a place to lay our head. But that's just the basics, and not even all of them. Probably like nature itself, in addition to those things I just mentioned that we must have, human beings must have liberty. It is not optional. It is not a question mark. It is not something you save for a magical day in the future when you voted your way to freedom. Human beings need liberty like we need oxygen, like we need food that is not poisonous, like we need shelter where we can lay our goddamn heads. The history of Tito, the lesson of Tito, is that you can play all the bonsai economics you want to. You can clip society as much as you want to. You can pretend that through your Marxist, globalist dictatorship of the proletariat, you can erase every feature of humanity that makes us human. You can delete every book, or worse yet, you can edit them out of existence so they no longer mean anything. You can chip every kid. You can put them into educational facilities when they're 5 years old. You can do all of this, but it will not succeed because we will simply die. You can keep replacing parts of our brain with chips. Guess what? After a few generations, all you're going to have is a flesh sack with a robot brain. The human will be gone. That's the key you need to remember here. Is it possible that the globalists will have a slave army of decerebral, fucking brain-removed fucking robots that are mostly chips in their brains and there's really no organic processing occurring? Who the fuck knows? It's possible. Not likely, but possible. But what I do know is that without freedom, we die. And if that's the freedom to be sometimes a little racist, and sometimes a little sexist, and sometimes to say things that make people uncomfortable, if that's the freedom to start a business so that you can actually do something with your life without filling out 50 fucking pieces of paperwork, y'all know why companies like LegalZoom exist to start businesses? I'll tell you why. Because when you're creating an LLC, there is a shitload of paperwork. Even if you form it in Nevada. That's not freedom, folks. That's really, really not. It's what you get when you have lawyers, you know? It's kind of like from that show Archer, one of my favorite shows. I think the first episode, you know, the secretary woman, HR woman, drops some donuts on the floor, and the old Craigie lady says, "That's how we get ants." Well, imagine subtracting ants with lawyers. That's how we get lawyers. Fuck. You want to ruin something? Involve a lawyer. I guarantee you, within 5 minutes, it will get ruined. I don't care if it's a kid selling lemonade juice. I don't care if it's a Boy Scout troop wanting to go on a camping trip. I don't care what it is. You want to fuck something up? Hire a fucking lawyer. Anyways, I should move to the next topic. But here is the main lesson, and I don't know if this is optimistic or not. I don't believe they can change the human. No more than I think we can change the orca or the wolf. And frankly, if you ever observe your cats and dogs and you're not an inhumane piece of shit, even your cats and dogs don't really lose their wildness and their individuality. And frankly, if you treat them as if they have that autonomy, they probably behave better. You know, they probably behave better if you don't go around beating them and putting chains on them and treating them like, you know, fucking chattel. Turns out animals and humans do better with respect and autonomy. It's crazy. It's crazy like that. Next topic. So before I go to the next topic, I need to move something around here. Excuse me, I just burpivated. Probably because of the exclamation last night. It was not good. I don't know. Dr. Grunkus, what can I say about Dr. Grunkus? Dr. Grunkus has what is referred to as a medical practice. He has a medical practice, as I stated in the past, in Little Saigon. Dr. Grunkus went to medical school basically in a country that was really an island nation. An island nation that existed in a great lake. A lake that existed within the mouth of a giant supervolcano. And in 1998, his nation was destroyed. So Dr. Grunkus came to this country as a refugee from a nation that no one ever believed existed to a life he could not imagine. Yeah, Dr. Grunkus has a medical practice, and this is what I want to say. I'm happy he does. The more he practices, the better he gets. I think my health will improve. In fact, I think my health will improve as Dr. Grunkus's abilities improve. And in that sense, I feel like I'm supporting somebody who's supporting me. Is that codependence? Next topic. Warning. And this is important, folks. This is a warning. And I've mentioned this before, but I will mention it again because it's worth repeating. Prior to paradigm shifts, in addition to a lot of people losing their shit, and some of my listeners, I think are folks who know what I'm talking about. They know what I'm talking about. I have listeners who do all sorts of work, who live in all parts of the country. I have even listeners who technically work for the crocodile, so they give me crocodile intelligence. They tell me about the crocodile shit. So yeah, prior to a paradigm shift or a major historical transition, people will lose their shit, and it isn't linear. At first, it might just seem like the same background noise of the fucking human decay, blah, blah, blah. But when it gets real, it'll be obvious, okay? And folks, it might even seem like, you know, hoodlums. Like basically, oh, it's just vandals, it's just hoodlums, it's just kids. That, too, is how it's going to start. It's a lot like that day in August in 2011 in Greenwood, in the Greenwood neighborhood of Seattle, where nothing bad happens. Because the National Association of Realtors makes sure that the paperwork says nothing bad happened. my dad was a small-time logger, like a small businessman in Washington State. Maybe at one point he had a dozen employees or something. But for the most part, he'd always been a small businessman until he died. And only in the, I think in the 60s and 70s is when his business was at its peak. By the end of the 70s, his business began to basically fall apart. And in a way, my dad found himself in a similar situation to the orca whales in the Puget Sound. He wasn't sure, he wasn't totally fully understanding completely why everything was going sideways on him. But he could tell that shit was going sideways. And listen, folks, unlike the orca whale, my father did not go gently into that good night. He got angrier and angrier. I can tell you that as his business declined, as his economic sector disappeared in the 1980s and morphed into something else, he got angrier and angrier. But here's the thing that happened to my dad, and it happened to a lot of people throughout American history, and it also goes back to my thing, lots of lawyers, very little fucking freedom. In the 70s and 80s, a whole bunch of regulatory events occurred. And when I say regulatory events, these are events that had to do with restricting logging. Now, it didn't stop logging from happening. What it did is it created what I would call an artificial economy of scale requirement, which means that if you wanted to be in business as a logger in Washington State and have your own fucking business, you would need a lawyer or two. You would need an environmental impact analyst or two. The point is, all of a sudden, logging became a hell of a lot more expensive to go do for reasons that didn't make a lot of sense. And then you add in that period of globalization that occurred in the 70s and 80s, and it wasn't just about shipping shit overseas, folks. It wasn't just about shipping jobs overseas, you know, to build fucking crap we'd buy at Walmart. It was also about tearing down forests in Malaysia, Southeast Asia, China, other places, Canada. The bottom line is, for all sorts of reasons, the habitat, the ecosystem of my father was drying up, was disappearing, and if he was not willing to change, he was going to die. Now, this did not kill my dad. What killed my dad was something else. But I think it would have. It might have. You know, you read about the farmers killing themselves in the United States. It's not just here, folks. There are farmers in India killing themselves. They've been doing that shit for years now, especially when it comes to the Monsanto bullshit. Fucking taking bottles of Roundup Ready and just drinking that shit in protest. But no one cares. Separate topic. So I'm mentioning this thing about my dad because he was in the midst of all this happening. And it's not the parable of the boiled frog. This is the wrong fucking comparison. Wrong fucking analogy. Okay? It is not the parable of the boiled frog. It is more like the fish out of water, or literally taking a salmon that's been swimming in the Pacific for years and years and years and just dropping it in some fucking freshwater lake. And you'd say, well, Dan, can't salmon live in freshwater? Well, yes, they can. Once they have slowly transitioned upriver. Because during that slow transition, the salt that is in their system balances, it achieves balance, and they don't go into shock. If you drop that salmon in fresh water, it will go into shock. My dad did not know what was happening to him because it was happening so fucking fast. It wasn't happening slow. It wasn't something he could make minor changes with. It was something where if he wanted to survive, and this is the important part, if my dad wanted to survive, if he wanted to somehow keep his dignity in some fucking form, he would have to be willing to make changes, which means maybe work for somebody else. There were things he would have had to do. He would have had to be more honest with my mom about stuff. I don't truly know if he was honest about how bad things were. I have no idea. That was their fucking business. And he died when I was 23, so I'll never fucking know. That was a minute ago too, folks. When you get near to major historical transitions, people go crazy. My father got angrier and angrier. I'll tell you something. I don't know if anyone ever studied this, but if anybody had done a sociological study of domestic violence in Cedar Woolley, Washington between 1975 and 1995, I think that would be an interesting fucking study. Even more interesting would be Aberdeen, Washington from the mid-70s up until today. And that'll tell you everything you need to know about fishing and logging in Washington State over the last 30, 40 years. But here's an even more important thing. More important and critical, because this is one of the reasons why people get pissed off. What I'm about to talk to you happens. It's not just now. Now, people in power have better technology. This is fucking true. They don't have to send a fucking town crier down to the public square to go, huzzoo, 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 the king has declared Friday Franken Day. On Franken Day, we will clear out the cobwebs. We will plant the soil with glimbus. We will reap the reaping and rob the robbers on Franken Day. Yeah. No, now they control pretty much every means of communication that they need, including your computer, probably. Dan, I run Linux. I run my own compiled Linux. Shut up, you motherfucker. Unless you manufacture everything that goes on that motherboard, including the fucking CPU, you have no idea how many man-in-the-middle attacks they got on you, you stupid fuck. And if you're out there running a Bitcoin miner and you haven't thought about this, you are deeply fucking confused. They own your CPU. How can I phrase this for you? Did you ever hear of the Minuteman missile program? Many things interesting about the fucking Minuteman missile program. It was technically the first cold-launched ICBM. Now, what does that mean, cold-launch ICBM? It means that you could push the button, launch the fucking missile, with the turn of a fucking key. One of the big innovations of Minuteman 1 was solid rocket fuel at that scale. For years, people thought solid rocket fuel at the scale of an ICBM was impossible. And that was a major innovation. But another innovation was something called the integrated circuit. Or better yet, the microchip. You want to know where the fucking computer revolution came from? It came from the same place that Google came from. Probably the same place that Steve Jobs and Bill Gates came from. And every other fucker that controls your digital life. It came from the Department of Defense, DARPA, deep state as fuck. And you don't think that they were baking man-in-the-middle exploits onto that fucking microchip right from the fucking beginning? How confused are you? I know a lot of you folks want to believe the internet is this, like, magical Wild West, except for the very uncomfortable fact that the whole thing was created by DARPA. And frankly, DARPA and the United States government still controls most of it. In various forms. Here's the other thing about these major transitions in history that's really important, and it's one of the reasons why I think people go crazy. They go batshit fucking crazy. Prior to the major slippage, prior to a historical event truly going sideways, you will have expert after expert, Jesuit after Jesuit, and this is me tipping my hat to the Reformation, you will have lots and lots of experts. I mean experts, PhDs, multiple PhDs. You're going to have journalists and writers and op-ed people, and they might even be people from different parts of the fucking political spectrum. Oh boy, isn't this interesting? But they will all chant the same shit towards the end. Everything is fine. It's not just a joke with some fucking dog in a bar drinking a beer while the fucking bar is on fire. We've all seen that meme. That meme's cute. They're going to tell you everything is fine. They're going to say the economy's doing great. They're going to tell you ignore the fucking fact that these apex predators called orca whales are just dying or disappearing. Who the fuck cares? Why do we care? Watch the fucking Seahawks. Towards the end, they will lie and lie and lie and exaggerate, and frankly, maybe not even on purpose. Because that's how fucking confused they are by their own bullshit towards the end. Towards the end, you're going to have a lot of fucking experts telling you that what we have now, what we have had, will continue forever. And that cry will get louder and louder towards the end. In fact, the censorship you're seeing, I gotta tell you, this is gonna sound weird, but it's almost a good sign. Kind of like that conversation about Marshall Tito. All of this fucking censorship, this is a reaction. This is not an action based on strength. This is a reaction out of weakness. You need to meditate on what I just said. Tyrannies and rulers only use this kind of over-the-top censorship when everything has gone totally sideways. I don't know the name of this fucking emperor, but there was a Chinese emperor once who declared that every fucking book should be burned. And this is way before Ray Bradbury, folks. This is hundreds and hundreds of years ago. He said every fucking book in my kingdom must be burned. Actions like these are not actions of strength. They are not actions of power. They are reactive actions of weakness. The worse this censorship cry comes, the more you get a lot of the freaks and gomgazoids jumping on the fucking censorship, fucking political correctness, fucking don't say anything that makes me uncomfortable train, the closer you are to the end of the ride. That is my true and honest opinion, folks. And I actually hope I'm right for young people, for kids, for my nieces and nephews. They won't fucking understand this today. Maybe 20 years from now, they'll fucking figure it out. But I kind of hope this ride is almost coming to an end. Because it's a crazy ride. It's a pirate ride. It's a murder ride. It's a ride involving white phosphorus. It's a ride where you go to countries around the world and obliterate them. It's a ride where you poison your own people with radioactive material and other kinds of shit. You tell them it's good for them. As we get closer to the end of this paradigm, as we get really to what I would call the super hot boiling space of the great discontinuity, the space where anything can, will, should, and must happen, the space where prediction becomes almost impossible, as we get closer to that fucking moment, every fucking expert you know, every leader, every king, every queen, every bishop, everyone with a stake in the current game will tell you everything is fine and ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance. Because they're not there, man. There is no fire. Just go back to work. Just go back to work, buddy. On this Tuesday, November the 12th, 2019, just past 6:20 p.m. here in Seattle, Washington. That's Pacific Standard Time. BST, right? For this wondrous day and the aprox eclipse, the brutiful world, if you take brutality plus beautiful, it's brutiful. For this time in the epic of the Gamuzak hordes and the Rengas kings of 40-on-28, as the various standards are lifted above the armies, you shall hear the scream of some scarlet mad gypsy in the night. The gypsy shall scream, "Huzoy, huzoy, the great war has begun. Let all the people cry." Have a great evening.